Hi, my name is Sean Taylor. That's my friend Chris Ford, a.k.a. the Objective Geek of all the social media. He confirmed with me he does not have a Tumblr. I don't know if people... Did people still have Tumblrs? So all the social media, minus one. All of them. Even LinkedIn. I bet he's active on LinkedIn. Welcome to Avatar The Last Podcasters.
Honestly, I hate going... You go to LinkedIn, where you find out people are farther in their career than you are, or...
Or somebody you genuinely like, I wonder where that person is now, but you don't really care about it, like, personally. You care about professionally. It's like, what is that person doing now? And then I'll go to LinkedIn for that. I show it to my boss sometimes as like a show of faith. It's like, look how infrequently I'm on LinkedIn. That's called that's called job content right there. That's what that is. And she thinks I'm joking. I was like, no, I have no interest in this at this time, so thanks. But anyway, today we're going to talk about... Last week, we tore Korra apart gently and respectfully. And now we're going to say all the nice things, the exact opposite. I say all the nice things that we love about Korra, which is going to be an easier task to perform. Chris, any lead up to this that you care to... care to disclaim?
Non-shout out to Barry. This one's not for him. I'm gonna blaze the crap out of Korra.
Wouldn't it be amazing? Like, instead of this is dedicated to Barry, it's like this is dedicated against Barry. Just kidding, Barry. Please come back on our show anytime you want.
This list. In my head, I was like, I got to make at least five. I got some honorable mentions. So it was that easy for me to make this list.
Chris, I thought that the tearing Korra apart would be more sensitive. And so I took more care in that one. This one, I was like, Chris has probably got it covered. So I didn't even write anything down. I was like, no, he's going to hit the points. I'm just going to be like, yeah. And then... No, I definitely took more care at the previous ones. Like, no, I want to try to word these intelligently and cover my bases. But nope, this one's a free for all. Chris, what do you like about Korra?
I'm gonna start somewhat superficial. Her character design is great. Love her character design. It is not a character design you ought to see from female characters. It is a sporty design, especially like her hair in books 1, 2, and 3. Don't have to mention 4. really, really awesome character design. Like, there's so much to it. There's, you know, water tribes to finish. 3 ponytails are great. Love the freaking I don't know what you call that you wrap around your waist. That's like, what is this even for? That's like fur around her waist.
Just like an 80s sweatshirt around the waist vibe that she's going for.
Oh, that's totally what it feels like. Yeah. And maybe I like this character design because I've made my daughter this costume before. And that's just a pretty easy thing to make.
The outfits feel modernized. Like, it does feel like, well, it's still Water Tribe. Clearly, right, there's an influence of the water. But it feels like Water Tribe living in the big city, for lack of a better descriptor.
Yeah, yeah, like, compared to Katara, it's like a lot more, like, I don't know, traditional.
I would say so.
Yeah.
Katara feels put together by hand, whereas Korra feels like, oh, maybe it's put together by hand, maybe she bought it in the store, you know? Could be either way. Yeah, great.
All right, what you got?
Chris,
you just want to keep going.
No, yeah, was that an honorable mention? That was great. No, I will happily chime in at certain points. So,
listen, that was just my number 5.
So, I love the... I talked about it last episode. I don't love that you don't get to go on her bending journey, right? And that's a big miss to me. But I love Korra's bending animations. I think her bending animations are great. I think they expand over the original Avatar The Last Airbender universe's actual bending maneuvers and animations. Yeah, you don't get to see him practicing them necessarily, but like the scene-to-scene bending and combat, just it looks tremendous. especially hers. Again, it feels
Mm-hmm.
very powerful. It looks powerful. It looks like easy power. It's like a word that you use to describe like a good left tackle in football. It's like, no, it doesn't look like they're trying hard. They just have easy power. That's what it looks like with her. It's well animated. It's great.
Oh, Sean, don't forget to ask me how my week was at the end of this. I don't need to interrupt it.
Oh, I forgot to. I think I thought I did when we were talking to Dan 2 episodes ago, and I didn't. Oh, that's on me.
Yeah, her bending looks great. It's also a testament to to the animation improving. But also I think it's a testament to like
It's
that
evolved.
she
Like it's different, like in the universe, but in a good way, as if bending has evolved, because it would.
Yeah. It's also I think the bending of a person who has mastered like completely all all three elements at first, but like and she uses them very interchangeably, like in book two,
Seamless
in book two,
transition.
yeah, book two, she's like on a freaking funnel that's going like really fast on a water funnel while fire bending at people, and it's like, yeah, that looks freaking awesome. Like we're not dealing with a person who's just learning how to do these things. Next thing I like is her fighting prowess. And I say that in the sense that Korra was taught how to fight, while I feel like other benders are taught how to bend and like do moves and stuff. While Korra, I can see that she has been trained to fight. Like there are specific little notes that if you've been in fights or if you've watched fights, you can tell, oh, that's a fighter thing. Like Korra throws feints. Like I've never seen people throw feints in Avatar: Last Airbender, but like in her firebending test that she did, she's like up in the air and she throws like just a soft firebending move to the person. And really, that wasn't to like hurt the person. It was just to distract the person because the person puts their block up, right? But then that leaves them defenseless when Korra, and then Korra comes in and throws a bigger punch. There's the feint that she throws when she's in the pro bending match with Tano, and it's like the one-on-one sudden death one where she like throws a jab and he dodges the jab. Like, and Korra didn't even throw it all the way. She's just like mid through it. And then she threw the right, it was either right, oh, it was an uppercut. And then she threw the right uppercut. Like, that is a fighting technique. It's not like a bending technique. That's like someone was like, no, you gotta know how to fight. And that's something you don't really see from any other characters. Like in professional fights are like chess matches of like, okay, I do this thing. That person counters with this. I gotta try and counter with that. Like, and Korra goes through that mentality that I don't think I see from any other character throughout either shows.
She looks like a martial artist almost as much as a bender, or like that the bending is like an extent of the martial artistry, as opposed to doing this motion, make this element.
Yeah.
Chris, I like that her team avatar feels a little less like Pokemon. Like, hey, what are those kids just doing out wandering around out in the world? It feels better than that. Her team avatar feels maybe more relatable as like a young group of various misfits of like their origin stories feel good together.
Yeah.
And again, it feels a little bit less like Ash just being 10 years old wandering around. Roaming the universe with his 12 and 14-year-old buddies or whatever they're supposed to be. So I'm gonna call it relatable. Maybe it feels more relatable or more palatable narratively.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very true. I should never have thought about that.
I mean, I have no
It
issue
does
with
feel
Aang and the kids
more.
wandering around, because that's like every
Does
show of our
feel.
youth, Pokemon, Digimon, it's all just like 10-year-old kids just out on their own. So, but it feels more real in like a
You
consequential
don't see
way.
you, yeah. You don't see a lot of teenage groups. Or really, yeah, you really only see young teens or preteens
Yeah.
have one thing, other thing I love, is her relationship with the airbending kids. That is like low key one of the one of my favorite things about Korra, that she is such a big sister to those airbending kids, and it's almost like Aang is just kind of working through her. I love the fan theory that Korra goes into the Avatar state in that race just so Aang can feel connected to his grandkids. It's completely fan theory, and I don't know if you even pass my headcanon meter, but I still love it anyway. But she has such a big sister rapport with them, with each of them, Mila, with Iki, with Jinora, and she has a very specific relationship with each of them also. Like with Milo, it's like a like she does that commander thing when Milo's on the phone with Bolin, and Bolin gets distracted. She's like, Milo, this is your support. This is your commander. Like, I need someone. So she's like, and Milo's like, yes. And it gets on it. Like, you can tell there's a relationship built between them. When Iki tells Asami that Korra has a crush on Mako, and like Korra's reaction is like, ah, and then she kicks Iki out, and then Iki's reaction is also like weird and really anime-ish. Like, and then when Korra like asked them to for dating advice, it's like, I just love it. And then most importantly, when they find Korra in the swamp, and Korra sees him and she cries. It's like, so freaking good.
I think she's like, especially with the kids, speaking to them on their level. Not always so much, we discussed in last episode with like Tenzin, for example, but with the kids, it's super cute when she interacts with them on their level in like a very familial way. It's adorable. Chris, I like Korra's independence, and it's not that Aang's not kind of independent, but he is sort of because he has to. But for all of Korra's brashness, that makes me want to pull my hair out. Underneath that is a lady who's just independently driven and motivated to do her job. Like that's never in question. Like every once in a while, it is with Aang, for example. Of his struggle as a younger person is like, why do I have to do this job? That's not fair. He's right, okay. But no, Korra's just independently driven, despite as you mentioned repeatedly, there's just sort of countless adversities where it would be easy enough to just like, it's time to pass this on to the next person, not next avatar. That sounds pretty morbid. Although we've discussed that before, I think. Or just like change or shift her role, but she never stops. And it's usually internally inspired. Almost always, whatever she's looking for kind of comes from within. Not without help or maybe prodding from other people, but it usually comes within.
Yeah, that is, she is very proactive and intentional with her journey. Not reluctant at all. Yeah,
No,
and it is,
no.
yeah.
I mean, there's absolutely necessary prods there, or like the like redirects or little kicks in the pants, but for the most part, it feels like it's all her doing the driving.
Man, I feel like we're going through these really quickly. It's funny because there's more conversations around the bad stuff of the why we hate Korra, because probably because it's hard to make the list, and also I agree with everything I'm saying on this
It's more delicate. It's more delicate
wholeheartedly.
touch.
My next thing that I love about Korra, I'm gonna get to a very specific moment because it's just one of my favorite moments of the series, and it's a character moment I think for Korra when she gives herself up to Zaheer and she sacrifices herself, essentially. Like, hey, I don't know what's going to happen, but I will give myself over to him. And, like, and they all say goodbye. Like, man, she says goodbye to each Mako, Asami, and Bolin. But the moment with her dad is, like, so freaking touching to me. Like, I forget what her dad tells her. Like, people, the, you know, the world will remember this. Like he understood just how important that moment was. Which reminds me of something.
Chris, there's only one more major thing that I have that I would care to discuss, and I want it to be a little closer to the end, and I think you still have two or three, if my math is any good.
All right, I got three. I have four left. I just added one.
Okay.
I'll mention my honorable mentions. Speaking of her dad, I love her dad being in this. I think it adds such a freaking interesting dynamic to this world. You don't often see the main character of fantasy fighting side by side with their father. At least I don't think you see it that often.
It kind of adds a different level of stakes in those moments too, which is cool.
Yeah. And then the fight they have together versus here while she's in chains. Oh my God, she's very so freaking good. Mm-hmm. And then while, you know, I hated some of that early stuff with her dad, and this is almost me like trying understanding the process of writing, that you have to show your characters at a certain point to show them a certain growth. You know, the more I try to write fanfiction, the more I'm like, geez, I understand the shortcuts that sometimes writers take. So as much as I hate some of the early stuff with her, how she treats her dad in book two, the end of book two, and her relationship with her mom and her dad, how she apologizes to him and stuff, and that goes into book three, and everything. And so, yeah, just really interesting dynamic there. One thing about Korra. Another thing about Korra. Sorry if you have anything to add about that.
Nope, keep going.
Okay. One thing I love about Korra that is only book one is I do love, to a certain extent, but to a big extent, her brashness. Like, I almost miss that character. I do. I absolutely miss that character who kicked butt first and asked questions second. Like, when she takes out the triple threat triads and she's so confident, and the person's like, you look like you just got fresh off the boat. She's like, like, and like, who do you think you are? And then she's like, how about you come and find out? Like, oh my gosh, I miss that core that's like, I'm going to beat your butt and enjoy it because I'm freaking her. As much as I love her, you know, growth and stuff, that Korra, I do miss a lot. I get why she's not that person, but I love that person.
I think that person is good because of the growth and change of that person, and it's like part of her arc is that we see a really wide scope of behaviors of like, all right, what would Korra season one do in that situation versus Korra book four do in that situation? I think that's cool to reflect on. But as far as just watching TV, I do kind of like Korra that throws a punch first and asks a question later. Absolutely. As far as just my eyeballs moving pictures to my brain to make it happy, I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Last thing, I love how powerful she is. She's the strongest avatar. Deal with it.
I think, Chris, I think this is a good time for me to add mine in right here to interject my final point. So I don't love going here because it's just how the writers decided to do it, and that's fine. But it is a technical point that exists. Korra elicits the best villains because she beats the last villains, right? She beats a villain and then we get a new story with a new villain that's also interesting. And then she beats that villain and we get a new story with a new villain that's also interesting. Like, Aang, we got the slow burn, and it's great, and I love Avatar. It's my favorite show. But we get, like, Korra's character being more powerful, probably more abrasive. Everything moves a little faster. We get her character brings out better, interesting villains every season. They do not disappoint, and it does that because she's good at her job. That's big. Basically what you're about to say right here, I think this fits right in that scope. No matter the
Yeah,
odds.
I mean, if Cor honestly, Cor versus Fire Lord Ozai would not be a close fight. Granted, even if Aang was, give Aang some credit, if Aang was like 18 or something in a fully realized avatar, I'm sure it wouldn't be a close fight for him either.
No, like Aang is a
But
child for sure.
yeah, but yeah, and as a, and it's so. I do not envy the writers of Korra, because when you have a character that when they are full, a character like the Avatar, when they are a fully realized Avatar, they have full control and mastery of all four elements, and they have the Avatar State mastered, that character should be pretty much unstoppable. Because they can do, the Avatar State is as powerful as it needs to be for anything. And you can still find ways to challenge that character and make them grow and make them go on some type of arc and build them up in one way or another. That is so freaking hard to do. Like it's like writing Superman. Like there, Superman's hard to write for a lot of people because it's like, well, we have Superman. He should be able to stop this. And you got to create different ways than just kryptonite. And so it's so I understand the challenge in writing a character like her.
And I think that's probably a point negative for me in the season two, in the Sean doesn't like season two as much bucket. Is it? It's not that it feels cheap or bad. I just don't like it, and I'm allowed to just not like it. It's like, all
I'm
right,
here to talk
well,
about
let's
things
just
you don't
make
like. No,
her another avatar to fight against. Yeah, that's it. Let's do that. And that makes me a little nervous for the upcoming Seven Havens, if we're being honest. But at least they're kids. They're blank canvas. We'll see how that goes. But no, since she's
I do wonder what the new character's like personality is gonna be like.
I
I assume she's gonna be kind of innocent. She doesn't, from the looks of it, she's gonna be kind of wide-eyed and innocent is what I'm assuming. I don't get the brash. I think she'll be like sweet and
She's gonna be
bright-eyed and innocent.
kid-like, but probably understanding of herself as an outcast. I don't think the show is gonna show her becoming an outcast. I think she's already gonna be in that state, right in the
Yeah.
state in the picture. She's gonna know that she's unwanted, maybe. But Chris, no. If I was gonna pitch, especially if we're talking about people that don't love Korra, or maybe they really didn't watch the whole show, they didn't finish because they didn't like a certain point or whatever. The pitches that you make for Korra is like, well, she grows so much as a character across the four seasons, right? That's kind of part A. And part B, or like hand in hand with that, is like every new villain is so unique and interesting and creative. And to me, that's like the Korra elevator speech, is this is what you get across the expanse, and this is why it's great and fun. And it all works because she's a strong, good character that gets over the last hurdle and then is ready for the next one.
Yeah. And that goes to my final point, or my biggest point that I love about Korra is her character arc. I think she has one of the best character arcs, and so underrated in fiction, definitely amongst female characters. And also, speaking of female characters, I love that Korra is a girl, because this genre is dominated by male characters. Anime of this genre, like say Shonen, is completely dominated by them. And I'm not saying that with anime, I'm saying it's in the same stratosphere.
Sure.
So to have Korra be how she is, to be a fully, I think, fleshed out character who isn't perfect, with flaws, with growth, with some things that you might not find great about her, the brashness. To me, that speaks more true, that speaks more honest. Like, and I grew up with four older sisters and a mom. So I see that array of emotions, of strengths and weaknesses that women carry every single freaking day, of vulnerabilities. Granted, Avatar doesn't, especially Shakura, doesn't really highlight the sexism, if you will. Avatar did that a lot with Katara and stuff. But even so, I'm sure there's underlining things that I think other people can read into it from their own life experiences. So, love that Korra is a girl. Oh, back to the character arc thing. Korra is it's so it is really hard. Oftentimes, we think about character arcs, and some of the best ones, it's often like a bad guy to good guy character arc, like Zuko. And those are a little bit easier to like identify, and a little easier to identify like how that arc did, how they're different, right? It's like, I was bad, now I'm good, and here's why. While Korra, and they feel like a completely different character. To me, Korra feels like a completely different character from book one, episode one, to book four, the last episode. But she's still good. Like her goals haven't changed, but the why has changed and the how has changed. Like her goal has always been like be the Avatar, defeat any bad people that come around, stuff like that. Maintain peace and balance in the world. That's always been the goal, right? But the why she does that at the beginning is kind of to prove herself. Or to prove really what everyone had told her to. And the how in the beginning was punch people in the face really hard. And when they end there, the how or the why is because it's the right thing to do, because I went through so much of these things myself, because I can empathize with this character. And the how to accomplish your goal is empathy first, protect people first. Like season one, Korra would not jump in front of a deadly beam to save a villain, to save a bad guy who caused her trauma and caused her damage. But she did that. And like she did that not knowing that she wouldn't die. Like she was risking the Avatar state. The thing, her being an Avatar was so tied to her identity that ruined her when she lost it at the beginning of season one, when she lost the three bending types, and season two when she lost Rava, and season three when she lost her ability to walk. Like, geez, the whole freaking series is about, now that I'm thinking about it, about it was like gaining your identity, and you're not what people have told you are, you're not what yourself have told you are, you're more than that. And she has so much of her identity tied to being the Avatar that at the end of book four, she's willing to give that up, right? She goes in the Avatar state to take that, to block that spirit. She could have died in the Avatar state, but she risked that just to save a person who she empathized with. Such a freaking huge character arc that I think is really understated and pretty difficult to write.
Yeah, especially probably not enough credit from myself in particular, but I assume from other people as well, of writing that character arc from, again, starting from a good character, not a villain or even like a like an anti-hero or like a schoolyard rival turned buddy, right? It's like no, strictly from a good character to a gooder character. And I don't know. You know, off the top of my head, I'm having trouble thinking of other places where I feel like that's done, really well to that magnitude. What else?
It's hard
What
to
else
find,
was?
honestly. Like, I mean, even in comic books and stuff. Like, I mean, Batman Begins. That's an origin story, and so like, he's going from a lost person. So he's not necessarily good in the beginning of Batman Begins,
No,
and
but
so
he's a
that's not
blank
the same.
slate to it, right? You're building off of a nothing foundation. What else did I even watch where that would be? Where that would
Where
be?
you feel like the character has completely changed
Yeah, I'm
and
trying
or
to
completely
look around the room
new.
for
I mean, there's
inspiration here.
definitely, mean, it definitely happens, but I feel like it's often not as like impactful or punch or as thematic. Gosh, who has to, in Black Panther, T'Challa has a great character arc. Where his is all I watch a lot of writing stuff, and his is often what people find because like the oh, go ahead.
We talked it was I think it was when we were doing Superman, and we've joked about it before, how in most things there's like one scene, one thing or whatever that sticks in my brain. It just bugs me. And I think it's usually something that, like, for me, breaks some immersion. Black Panther, stellar movie. But there's that one scene where the CGI background just looks like shit, and I hate it so much.
I have
Standing on
no idea what you're talking
next time you watch it. Next time you
about. Well,
watch
no,
it.
I don't want to watch it. I don't want to ruin my experience watching.
No,
So it's
well,
like
but Chris, you're more
watching
mature than
Disney 2
you're more mature
after
than I am.
realizing they
You'll
don't use their weapon.
no, you'll get over it faster than I will because you're more mature than me. You'll process it better. You'll be like, okay, I get it, and then you'll move on. You'll be fine. But there's just one scene in there where it looks atrocious. I get to that scene, I'm like, how did, why does this thing get to pass? It looks like. Anyway, like they gave that to the intern, Chris. That's got to be what happened. Like, here, you go handle the background right here. And he's like, I got it. And then that's what we got. And TMNT 2 is a delightfully charming movie. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. I really do. We say it a lot. I love TMNT 1. It's a great movie. It really holds up great. The only even nitpicks I can find are all kind of like sound design or dialogue related, which is just kind of a product of the time, I would say. And they're pretty minor. They're pretty minor. But anyway, that's a different episode for a different day.
Oh, Black Panther. So T'Challa's arc is, so the lie he tells himself is, we have to protect Wakanda, protect the secrets, protect its values and stuff, and keep it in house, or keep it in the country. So that's how he starts. That's the lie he tells himself, and that Wakanda is stronger for that. And then through Killmonger, he learns that, like, oh no, we should be sharing our resources with the rest of our brothers and sisters across the world. And so that's his arc that he goes through that. Like, he's still good and the end's still good, but there's a clear difference in opinion and stuff. Granted, that character doesn't feel as different to me as Korra from book one to book four. It is honestly hard to find. I mean, there's other characters that you feel like they got stronger or stuff like that, but to me, that is not a character. That's not part of the character. That's part of the character's journey and part of the character's development, but it's not necessarily part of the character's arc.
That's what, when I'm looking over at the shelf here, that's what I'm seeing a lot of. So I'm looking at like Lord of the Rings might be a good example of your most recent description there. Like if you look at Frodo and Sam, they start out as pretty flat characters, like a prototype hobbit or whatever with, I mean, I guess Frodo's got his quirks. But they don't really, they start out as good characters and they end as really good characters, but they don't really develop a whole lot. They just go through kind of standard like required trials and tribulations for a story to have, and they come out the
Or
other
no
side
tribulations, just trials.
just trials. You can't just have tribulations, that'd be, but it's not that they're the same character, it's just not a huge arc, and those aren't really things that are changing them a whole lot as a character. They're just like common adversities, and I'm picking those because I love those movies, but like there's no. It's not like Frodo comes out, like, goes in a good person and comes out a great person. Like, no, he comes in a good person and he does his job and probably comes out a slightly better person, I guess.
Yeah, it's hard to. Like I said, I'm looking at my shelves now, trying to
Fine.
find
What
really
else?
good
What else
examples of.
qualifies? What about the character, the main character from the Lego movie? You know, he goes in a flat blank slate, but a good person, and comes out a master builder with immense problem
I
solving
forget.
skills.
I forget what his like.
He,
What the lesson learned was
uh,
from
like a, like an, acceptance of using your own strengths and your own creativities.
Okay.
And so he goes in as a guy who kind of only follows the instructions and only is capable of following the instructions. And he comes out of it of like, no, he's like a blank slate because there's nothing in his empty head. In fact, Morgan Freeman, that is a good movie. I like the movie a lot. Morgan Freeman's lines is like, your mind is so prodigiously empty. And then I forget what else he says, but like, that's the foundation of his skills, is that he's a completely blank slate. And he grows a lot as a character, despite starting as a good character. That's probably a bad comp because it's a Lego, movie, but it's a good movie. Good movie.
The Batman, he's good, both, and still very active, but he figures out that vengeance isn't the way he should be going about things, that there should be about more than that. I wouldn't say it's like a dramatically different character. Korra feels like a much different character from book one to book four. I wonder if there's any TV shows. Those are like more longer story formats.
What about, so in the trilogy that I prefer, even though Spider-Man 3 is kind of a trash movie, what about Spider-Man across those three movies, the Tobey Maguire ones? Not the quality of the third movie as a whole, just Spider-Man himself. He goes in a good character, and by the end, he's noticeably a different but better character.
Is that growth just by it might be hard separating, for me personally, growth through a character arc or just growth through just like natural maturing?
I think he has a legitimate character arc because you see like pretty dramatic ideological shifts at moments throughout the film, throughout those films. I don't know. I might have to watch. It's been so long since I watched the third one because every time I even think about that Venom dance scene, I just want to throw up. And I don't know, but I feel like he's maybe a different guy in a better way.
Yes. Do you think Harry Potter feel? Well, and that one's hard because he starts off like a 10-year-old, ends up like a 17-year-old.
He is, but he is always like defined by the exact same characteristics, like the things that work for him in book one, which is kind of a brash amount of bravery, is still pretty much his go-to tool at the end. Like, he basically has to accept at the end that his solution is for him to die. It's pretty much a brazen thing to be like, all right, I guess. Right. So I don't know. He's always been kind of self-sacrificing and brazen.
Maybe. And I haven't watched these movies that much, but Luke Skywalker could be that. Not the beginning of the story.
His motives change quite a bit.
Yeah. Tracking him probably from like the end of A New Hope. Comparing like the end of him. Because trying to compare him of like being just a whatever. I don't know if he was a farmer or whatever. To like the end of the last movie. That's kind of. To me those are. That's almost an irrelevant character.
The first half or three quarters of New Hope is essentially irrelevant to your point currently, not to the plot of the movie.
Yes. Yes. So maybe that's the one. Because I do think he goes on this journey of like, I had to defeat Vader and like, I had to defeat the Force and I got to get stronger so to do that. And then he ends it with like, no, I'm not going to kill my dad. Like,
he starts like, more blind, right? Like he's got this newfound sort of power and responsibility, but it's almost like he has a very narrow view of what it is that he has to do with that. Whereas by the end of the third film, he does feel like he's operating more independently and more thoughtfully. That could be an okay comp.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, Harry just sticks to his go-to move pretty much all seven movies.
Risk his life.
It's a meme, but every time I see it, I share it. Like, it's a dumb meme, but every time I see it, I send it to Heather, and it's like they rename all the books, but like But Harry Potter in the time Hermione saved him this way, and Harry Potter in the time Hermione saved him that way, and it's like, I know
Yeah.
who the real hero. I know the
Oh,
real
let
hero.
me, before I forget, let me
Chris.
read some comments.
Oh, comments, and I'm gonna ask you how your day
Yeah, but then,
was.
yeah, but then, yeah, then
All
the
right, okay.
other one. From, dang it. Show me more. From, oh, show me more. Where are we at here? Start off with Caitlin. There we go. Okay. Stuff that Caitlin like. She's an interesting character. Her personality in books 3 to 4. That's just interesting because under her dislikes was books 1 through 2. Hey, understandable. Then other people who posted relatively nice things about Cora, if I can find it. That's not it. Because it's probably right here. Nope. Something about a batarang. Oh my gosh. Gosh, I guess I should just go to my. Sorry. Freaking sucks. Still freaking sucks. Okay, here we go. I won't say the two names because this was in a group and so-and-so says, I like how real she is with her mental health. Real depression, real PTSD. Doesn't bounce back in this episode like nothing happened. Actually goes through ups and downs as she heals. Yeah, absolutely agree with that. Love how opposite she is from Aang and how she put herself in danger to protect others. Yeah, I do love, like, I didn't want another Aang. And I never do. Some people might want another Aang and think, like, because they're technically the same person that they would expect her to be that, but I love that she's not. I love how, another person wrote, I love how realistic she is as an avatar. When she fell hard, but she rebounded by working to fight past her issues. She didn't receive what I believe to be Deus ex machina, like Aang's ability to take away someone's bending. Just a personal opinion. Don't kill me. Her villains tested her physically, spiritually, and emotionally. It's why I personally love Korra over Aang as the Avatar. Oh, I didn't say this before. And I'm surprised I didn't say it. To me, she's still the best Avatar. And this is probably one of my hottest takes, that she is a better, she's stronger than Aang. I said that before. In today's episode, I've said it plenty of times before. I think she's stronger than Aang, has a better character arc than Aang, and is a better avatar than Aang. And I love Aang. Aang, remember, Aang's my fourth favorite character, right? Was it
I
fourth?
forget.
Somewhere around
I
there.
forget.
And wasn't nowhere on Sean's list.
I
Yeah.
wonder. I mean, I wonder if Kyoshi, if I still like Kyoshi. And then Kyoshi got the whole wonky arc built out that, like, at the end, we know she kind of goes, the see herself become the villain. I want to see more Kyoshi's full lifespan, I think. But different discussion for a different day.
Another person wrote, I love her passion for protecting others and selflessness too. Absolutely. Other person wrote, the character growth. And then they continue to write, I remember thinking, yo, that avatar is redneck. What the F? But she had to be different from Aang to be individualized
She's a
herself.
redneck?
Funny thinking. I do think she has country. She might not cut, like,
Rustic,
not country.
rustic
Not
rural manner
country
to
as
her.
in, like, more rural than country.
They.
Country to me is, like, very specific. She's more rural.
I'll say
Like,
they. That
she
person
grew up
knows
out in
different
the rural.
rednecks than I know, man. That's not what I would call it.
You know what's funny is that in, like, in the Japanese sub of Dragon Ball Z, Goku is apparently voiced as a redneck, or as a hick in a sense. But, like, that didn't translate over to English. It would be so interesting if he had, like, that accent in the English dub. I would think Goku would. But Goku is also, like, foreign. So, like, Goku grew up out in, like, in the wilderness. And, like, I get that Korra, like, grew up out in the middle of nowhere until she was kind of found, and she does have a little bit of that rural countryside aspect to her.
I kind of also want to know what does redneck in Japanese sound like?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to try that accent out.
No, I'm out.
But yeah, that's
Chris, Chris,
why we love Koa.
tell me about your week. Tell me what you've been up to. How you been? What have you been doing?
I getting ready to go on vacation. And when I'm on another cruise, and I like my favorite thing I like to do on a cruise is just to read. I don't like funny. I don't really read books at all, unless a new Avatar book comes out. I didn't read that Jin novel because it's just I'm so uninterested in to know about Jin's life in
Yeah,
Ba Sing Se.
sure.
But so I need something to read, and so I was like, oh yeah, I. There's a manga called Vinland Saga, and it has two seasons. And at first, I thought that was it. That was the end of the story because it ends in a really kind of ending way. And then I found out, oh, there's way more to it. So, like, you know what? I'll read Vinland Saga on my trip. And so I picked it up, went to Gamers HQ. They sell manga now, and bought
Nice.
like all these volumes that picks up from where it's not even all of them. I think there's like four more. But I was like, all right, I'll read this on my trip. But I was like, I'll first rewatch the anime. And so I spent the last 2 days watch or last 3 or so days binging the anime, and it's such a great freaking show. Like it is such a great anime. I don't know if I could recommend it to you, Sean, because there's nothing really funny about it. The
I'm out.
it's I laugh maybe 5 times throughout the 48 or so episodes. Essentially the show is about it's a historical fiction time during like Viking times and England and fights and stuff like that and people ruling and whatnot. But the story is about this Viking. He gives up fighting and he goes to Iceland and one day and he gives up fighting, goes to Iceland, creates a family and stuff there. And one day one of his old Viking buddies comes back, is like, oh, we know you abandoned us, but the king of England or whatever is willing to forgive you because we gotta go attack so and so. Anyway, it was all a trap. That Viking, other Viking dude, just hated him. His name was his the good guy's name is Thor, Thors. That's his name, Thors. And while he's like in his fight, and like all the people from this small little village is like, yeah, we're gonna go fight. War is great and stuff. Let's go fight. We'll prove ourselves to be a man. And even his son is his little son is like, yeah, Dad, I want to go fight with you. So the son sneaks up on the ship to go. Unknown to Thor's. His son's name is Thorfinn. Anyway, the other Viking dude ends up betraying Thor's, and Thor's the only way to save all the people who aren't good fighters who came along with them from the village, and his son agrees, like, yeah, I'll let you guys kill me, but let them go. And when like and like so the dude named Askeladd kills Thor's. This is all like the first 4 episodes, maybe. I'm spoiling some parts of it, but Askeladd kills Thors, and Thorfinn, his son, swears vengeance on Askeladd. He's like, I'm gonna kill Askeladd. He's so driven by vengeance. And one of the things his dad told him before he died, because there was getting Thors was getting ready to go fight, even though he didn't want to go fight, but the Viking people threatened to kill the people in the village. And like his son is like, yeah, Dad, I'm gonna go defeat our enemies. And his dad is like, son, what do you mean by that? Like, you want to go kill someone? And then Thor's his dad is like, son, you have no enemies. And that almost seems like something that's like you would just say to anybody who's never been in any type of war. But then he goes on to say, you have no enemies. No one has enemies. Like it's such a statement. And like his dad, when they were on the ship, took out all these people without killing them, without even using his sword. And he says to Thorfinn, like, "Son, a true warrior needs no weapon." Now, he says all these things, and Thor's being like, "None of this makes any sense to me, Dad." Anyway, after Thor's is dead, Thorfinn wants vengeance on Ascalad. He's like, "I'm gonna kill you, but my dad was honorable, so I'm gonna kill you honorably. Like, I have to challenge you to a duel, and you have to accept the duel. I have to beat you in a honorable duel." But Ascalad is like if he was in the Game of Thrones universe, he would be. He's like a cross between Littlefinger and, but not creepy. A cross between like Littlefinger and someone who's really great with a sword. Maybe any of them who's maybe Jaime Lannister or something like that. But even better. Like, and he's so manipulative and stuff. But Ascalad would only say yes to a duel if Thorfinn would go do these little things for him, like prove himself on the battlefield or go kill a general on the other opposing side. So it's this weird like system that Thorfinn works for Ascalad only to kill him. And so like anyway, it's a story about vengeance and stuff, and can Thorfinn get over this? And like Thorfinn has honestly probably the best character arc I've seen in anything, including this last watch, put him over Zuko for me. Like, and it's such good writing that I'm like, I don't want to write fan fiction. Like, this is too good. I don't, and it's like it's a dumb comparison. Like, of me even trying to compare myself to something like that, but like, this is so good. It makes me not want to put anything out there in the universe. It's so good. But my main point to you that I start off with is that I have five shows that I think every single person should watch to become a better human being. The first is Hey Arnold, because Arnold just, if you watch Hey Arnold, you'll see that Arnold does good stuff for people without expecting anything in return. Just does good. And it doesn't matter who. It's for people who are his enemies, people who bully him. He still sees the good in people. He still wants to help people. The second show is Avatar: The Last Airbender, of course. You can just get any quotes off of Iroh or follow the character arcs. Third show is The Good Place. It's a freaking great show to watch and learn a lot about how to become a better person. I had on my list for a long time Attack on Titan, and I still kind of hold to that, but Vinland Saga would be more so on this list than Attack on Titan. There's some stuff about Attack on Titan that I feel like would go over people's heads a little too much, and they'll just get wrapped up in like the rumbling and stuff. While Vinland Saga is more concrete of the lesson you would take from it. So yeah.
I would say that Attack on Titan, one of the things that doesn't hit me, or at least that throws me off of the valuable lessons that you're trying to get to underneath, is there's like large, really, really big sensational elements to it that are almost a disservice to the watching it to think about your actions and their consequences, lessons that are underneath. Like there's so many big, big monumental things that are like, what am I trying to? Sensational is not quite the right word. Well, maybe it is. Maybe it is. But that are almost like
I
distracting
get
from
your
the message. And so if it has less of that, it would probably do a better job of delivering these
the
thought exercises that you're after, I think.
yeah the interesting thing is that like so many people, there's a lot of fans who kind of hate season two of Vinland Saga, because it's season one is like fight, fight, fight. Thorfinn's like, I gotta kill all these people, and there's great action in it. While season two is like, about to spoil it, but Thorfinn's like a slave, and he's just like depressed and trying to fight himself. And it's just, there's not really much fighting action scenes in it. It's more just like character stuff. But I enjoy season two a lot more than season one. Such great writing in it.
Would you Where what was the fifth show though? I only Good Place,
Oh,
Avatar, Hey Arnold,
Villain. Villain
Villain
Saga.
Saga, and
Attack on Titan. But
oh,
that's an
you're
iffy
still
one.
including Attack on Titan. Okay. I
But that
don't
one I was on the verge of.
Man, shows that make me a better person. I'm in Good Place, I definitely agree. Hey Arnold, Avatar, I definitely agree. What else do I even watch? Does football count? Does football make me a better person? Probably not.
Football
Probably not.
definitely not make you a better person.
Definitely. I think it makes me think.
Not that it makes you, it doesn't make you a worse person.
I
It
think
just doesn't.
football inspired my love for like analytical thinking. The idea that like, all right, well, I'm never going to be the athlete out there, but I can still understand my interest in statistical probability, geometric angles, things like this. But I don't know about better person by any stretch. Now I gotta look at my shelf and see what am I watching that's making me a better person. But villain saga. I feel like I'm about to be tricked into watching another anime that's gonna make me sad.
It doesn't make you sad,
I'm gonna
but it's on
suggest that it
Netflix.
probably doesn't exist to hurt me, just like Attack on Titan seems to.
No, it's not like that. It's not like, hey, we're going to introduce you to some characters that we have to kill. That maybe we don't even have to kill, but that we're going to kill. It's not like that. It's not even, I don't think it's even remotely like that in that sense.
And I
Like,
still.
honestly, there's like season one, there's like four important characters. And then if you just remember those names, they'll be fine. One's is Thor, Thorfinn, Thorkel, Askeladd, and Canute. Those are the main characters. I'll say the hardest thing about it is like, okay, what's the historical? Who's fighting what? But and they try to explain it, but yeah, it's great, great show.
What day are you leaving again on your trip?
Next Sunday, yes, next Sunday.
Nice. All right, well, I hope it goes well, and I hope you make it through. Those books look like the four biggest books that I would have ever read ever.
I mean,
I
it's
assume that
manga
those are
though.
graphic novels,
So
or
there's,
not assume, I hope.
yeah. Honestly, it'll take me really fast. It won't take me long at all to read.
Well, at least if they're graphic novels, which I hope they are, that's better. But that being said, I technically do have to edit and post one of these bad boys. So we're gonna call it a day, and I'm gonna go
Yes.
edit a trivia video. And Chris is gonna go drink half a bottle of NyQuil and then operate heavy machinery. Because he's a rebel. He's a rebel. Well,
I hope to sleep until 10 tomorrow. That's the plan.
that'd be awesome. My baby is a good sleeper, but he also is like clockwork, so I'll be waking up probably the same day I wake up every other day, which is very regular. Which is fine. I would rather have it predictable. But all right, well, hey, thanks everybody for being here. Appreciate you. Chris, appreciate you as well. Thanks for watching Avatar: The Last Podcasters. I'm Sean Shaler. That's Chris Ford, aka The Objective Geek. I'll put all the stuff
Cora's
in the description.
the
Korra is possibly the second best, maybe behind Kyoshi. We need more information on Kyoshi, on that roller coaster that was
She killed innocent
two
people. No, I'm
hundred
kidding. I don't.
years of her. Chris, if you live 200
I'm just.
people or 200 years, you'd probably kill an innocent person too, at least once,
Nope, never.
at least one time.
I would let myself die after that. Killing an innocent? Especially from the Avatar?
What if you
I'm like, you know
thought? What
what?
if you thought you were doing good? You know? What if you
Nah,
thought you were doing good things?
when you gotta wrap this up, tag someone else in.
Off
I'm
yourself and
out,
get
man.
out of here, old lady. Next week, why we hate Kiyoshi? Because she's old. Am I right?
That would be. I don't.
Be
I
an
honestly
amusing
think that would be
episode.
harder to do than Korra.
That's kind of amazing. It's funny to how much conjecture would go into it, even though, you know, Korra, we know X years of her life, right, to this point. Kyoshi, we know that she lived 10 times that amount, but it would still be a very large amount of conjecture. Just kind of enjoyable to think about. But anyway,
here's one thing I hate. Here's one thing, is that Kyoshi didn't do anything to Chin the Conqueror, who's conquering the Earth Kingdom, until he got to Kyoshi Island.
Yeah,
like, why you
selfish.
Wait till then?
That's kind of selfish.
Yeah.
But even what if he was really clever and he, you know, we don't know that whole story. If he had her diverted somewhere else with the tactics or whatever.
She was just sitting there waiting.
She's watching him from a chair and she's like, don't you get no closer. And then he got closer.
He was like, I'm old.
Yes.
This is when she's like 200. Like, I'll wait for him to come over here.
I got
to
see how serious and this guy is.
They're not just going to the Avatar state and we'll just float away.
I will end you.
And then Float On comes on from Modest Mouse. That song's so fun to play on Rock Band.
It's a solid tune. Well, hey, if there's any positive interactions you can have with us, like comments and likes and subs and stuff, we appreciate all that. And thanks for being here. We'll see you next time.